So Daniel chapter 9, I'm going to begin in verse 20. And whilst I was speaking, this is Daniel, and praying and confessing my sin and the sin of my people Israel, and presenting my supplication before the Lord my God for the holy mountain of my God, yea, whilst I was speaking in prayer, even the man Gabriel, whom I had seen in the vision at the beginning, being caused to fly swiftly, touched me about the time of the evening oblation. And he informed me and talked to me and said, O Daniel, I am now come forth to give thee skill and understanding. At the beginning of thy supplications, the commandment came forth, and I am come to show thee, for thou art greatly beloved. Therefore, understand the matter and consider the vision. And now he's going to go into the description of it. So starting in verse 24, here's what Daniel's being shown or described or told. 70 weeks are determined upon thy people and upon thy holy city, thy people being the Jewish people, holy city being Jerusalem, to finish the transgression and to make an end of sins and to make reconciliation for iniquity and to bring in everlasting righteousness and to seal up the vision and prophecy and to anoint the most holy. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and to build Jerusalem unto the Messiah, the Prince, shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. The street shall be built again and the wall even in troublous times. And after 62 weeks shall Messiah be cut off, but not for himself. And the people of the Prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary, and the end thereof shall be with the flood, and unto the end of the war desolations are determined. And he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. In the midst of the week he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease. And for the overspreading of abominations he shall make it desolate, even until the consummation, and that determined shall be poured upon the desolate. Now, there's a lot here that we can't go into everything he's talking about. We're going to look at it a little bit from a height to try to get the bigger perspective of it. But trust there's some things here that can help us and maybe encourage us in our faith. Now, this is another one of those subjects that we've talked about on multiple occasions. I just briefly look, we host our sermons currently on Sermon Audio. We have since, from Sermon Audio, I think since 2013 or something like that. Before that, we had a different hosting site for our sermons. And I just looked briefly, and it gives me a rundown. You can't see it if you go there. I see it on the administrator side of the website there, and it gives me a rundown on how many's each been downloaded, how many's been looked at via or maybe listened to via the website or through Sermon Audio. It just gives me a rundown, a bunch of them, and I can kind of look at some different things about it, and interesting sometimes. But one of the things I've seen is this: if you look at the top 11, now the very top one is one that surprised me. It still surprised me because that number keeps building, the number one. And when I got done with that sermon, I said, well, what a failure that sermon is. I didn't want to quit the ministry. Man, that was a lousy sermon. And that's been the number one downloaded one. I don't know why. Maybe people are laughing at it. Maybe it's a big joke. I don't know. But anyways, that's one interesting thing. The other thing is this, of the top 11, now there's I don't know. I think 1,200 sermons now we have online. But the top 11, 6 of those top 11 deal either with creation or end times. I think that's interesting. Over half of them. That seems to be something that strikes people's fancy, I guess. And so all that to say that I think people are interested in certain topics, but also we've covered these topics. This is not the first time. If you've been in our church a while and you say, Pastor White, we've never heard you talk about end times, I'm going to be wondering how much you've been sleeping during the preaching, because we have talked about this, not every Sunday, not all the time, but on a regular enough basis, I think we have some understanding of these things. So this is not a repeat of those. It's not like go to the file, pull the old one out, and let's say it again. But I'm just saying that we've covered this from different angles, and now we're going to look at it from a little bit of a different angle, maybe an angle that we've kind of looked at, but maybe really not really hammered this angle prior. So I want to look at it from this particular angle. Now, just like when we talked about the King James, I don't want people to sit there and wonder. I don't want you to question, like, waiting the whole Bible study to figure out where do I stand. Like, is he for it? Is he against it? What exactly does he mean? So I like to be clear. I don't like to confuse people. I don't like to make people guess. So I'll very clearly state my belief about what the overall ones. And this is the large statement here, because we're uncovering a very small part of this statement. But I believe in the pre-tribulation, premillennial rapture of believers. That's my doctrinal stand. That means this: there's a rapture, there's a seven-year tribulation period, there is then the return, the physical return of Christ to the earth, and then he sets up the millennial kingdom. Now, there's a lot of details that I'm leaving out that fits in all those things, but that's how we look at it. There is mid-trib, there's post-trib, there's all-millennial, there's post-millennial. There's a bunch of different ways that people look at it, but from my understanding of Scripture, I'm a pre-tribulation, pre-millennial, rapture of believers believer. Okay? Now, let me give you a couple thoughts as we get into it. I'm going to give you two parts of the Bible study. One is we're going to look at the prophecy, and then we're going to look at some application. 3 points on each side. But let me give you a couple introductory thoughts here. Okay, the beginning point to understand end times, and I put it in quotes because I'm emphasizing when we say end times, we're talking about the second coming of Christ, both the rapture and the revelation. In other words, when we go up to meet the Lord in the clouds, and then when he physically returns to earth, okay? Those are two separate parts of the second coming. But the beginning point to understand these end times is the book of Daniel. It's important that we start at the right spot. We talked about that in a previous Bible study. Look with me in verse 24. 70 weeks are determined upon thy people and upon thy holy city to finish the transgression, to make an end of sins, and make reconciliation for iniquity. So, this was written about 2,500 years ago. And God says to Daniel, I'm going to tell you, kind of in a bird's eye view, what I'm going to do from now to when Jesus Christ himself sets up his kingdom upon the earth. Not that Daniel understood it all, because we don't understand it all, but he gave him some idea of what was going to happen. Now, when you think of that, because if I went around and said, well, if we're going to look at end times, what book would you go to? Most people would say, what do you think? Revelation. Okay, that's a good book. It's a great book. It's in the Bible. How could you say anything negative about it? But it's not the starting point. Okay, it's a great book, but it's not the first book. Okay, the book of Revelation is based on what is already prophesied in Daniel. Now, that's important to understand. It's not like God said, Daniel, I know what I told you. Forget it. We're going to start again here with John, and I'm going to try this again. That's not what happened. The book of Revelation is based on, in fact, when we were in Bible college, let's see here. Now, Brother Choma has disappointed me at times in his memory. I was the best man in the wedding. Well, we were in each other's wedding. I know you're the best man in mine. And I've asked him before about our wedding. He's like, oh, when was that? Where was that? I was there? Yes, you were there. You're the best man. Okay, here we go. Brother Choma, you ready? In Bible college, what was the class that we studied end times? Do you remember? Daniel and Revelation. So even in Bible college, thank you. So even in Bible college, they took those two books and they put them together. And they said, okay, you got to study Daniel and you got to study Revelation. Here's the foundation and here's the what's added to it to help us understand more. So the book of Revelation is based on what is already prophesied in Daniel. Revelation cannot be understood apart from the book. It's like this. You ever read the book of Hebrews? The book of Hebrews is a difficult book. But if you had no Leviticus, which really Hebrews kind of is a spinoff of Leviticus. If you didn't have any Leviticus understanding and you read the book of Hebrews, you're really scratching your head. You have to go back to the book of Leviticus and understand, that's the Old Testament book, and see, okay, here's what the Old Testament says, and then Hebrews is helping us understand it a little bit better. Same idea about Daniel in Revelation. Now, here's an important statement to understand. Nothing said in the New Testament replaces Daniel's prophecy. Okay, it's not like God shifted gears here and said, okay, I know what I said, but now I'm going to say something different. Okay, so Daniel becomes this starting point. Now I want you to go with me to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5. And look down with me at verse 17. And notice what Jesus says here. Think not that I am come to destroy the law. Now, typically, this is kind of where we end when we're talking about this. We're talking about Jesus coming. He is not doing away with the law. He's fulfilling the law, and that is true. But that's not all this verse says. Think not I am come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill. So, isn't that Jesus is doing away with the prophecy? He's coming to fulfill the prophecy, and even in the continued revelation into the book of Revelation gives us a little bit more understanding of it. Go with me to the book of Acts, Acts 28. That was Matthew 5:17. Acts 28. Look with me in verse 17. Acts 28, verse 17. Now let's look at the Apostle Paul. He's going to be preaching, and notice what he's going to say here, or what's going to be said here. Acts 28, look with me in verse 17. And it came to pass, after 3 years, Paul called the chief of the Jews together, and when they were come together, he said unto them, Men and brethren, though I have committed nothing against the people, or customs, or of our fathers, yet was I delivered prisoner from Jerusalem into the hands of the Romans, who, when they had examined me, would have let me go, because there was no cause of death in me. But when the Jews spake against me, I was constrained to appeal unto Caesar, not that I had ought to accuse my nation of. For this cause thereof I have called for you, to see you, and to speak with you, because of that, for the hope of Israel, I am bound with this chain. Let's just stop there for a moment so you understand. Paul now was arrested in Jerusalem. They were going to kill him. The only way he saw, I'm going to survive this, as a Roman citizen, he had the right to appeal to Caesar, which he did, which means the Roman army had to protect him to get him all the way to Caesar. So he basically said, the only reason I'm here in Rome was because they were going to kill me. I'm not against the Israelites. I'm not against my people, but I had to make this claim in order for my own protection. And now he's going to begin speaking to them. Verse 21, they said unto him, We neither received letters out of Judea concerning thee, neither any of the brethren that came showed or spake any harm of thee. But we desire to hear of thee what thou thinkest, for as concerning this sect, he's talking about believers, Christians, we know that everywhere it is spoken against. Think about that for a second. You say, man, why does the world hate Christians? Let me tell you, the world has always hated Christians. This is not a new thing. For the world to be anti-God, anti-Bible, anti-Christ is not a new thing. It may be more so than at other times, but we've always have been this poke in the eye to the world because we stand for righteousness. We stand for holiness. We stand for the Bible. When the world's trying to go off into sin and immorality and all kinds of filthiness, we're standing over here saying, no, this is what the Bible says. This is what's right. And therefore, we become a salt in their wounds. And so, yeah, they do dislike us. They speak against us. Verse 23, And when they had appointed him, Paul, a day, there came many to him into his lodging, to whom he expounded and testified the kingdom of God, persuading them concerning Jesus, both out of the law of Moses, now watch this, and out of the prophets from morning till evening. And some believed the things which were spoken, and some believed not. All that to show you, here's Paul, here's in this situation, he's going to preach to them, he goes to the law, of course he didn't go to the New Testament, it's not even finished being written yet. So he goes to the Old Testament, he talks them out of the law, talks them out of the prophets, confirming these things. So the New Testament does not do away with these prophecies, in fact it's just further fulfilling what they are. So what is this prophecy in Daniel that we're talking about? What is this foundation to understanding the end times? Well, I'm glad you asked. So let's go back to Daniel 9, and let's learn some things about it. Now, again, we could do a whole Bible study just in the details of this, but we're just trying to give you a quick understanding that would help you as you study the Bible. All right, big number one. Here we go. The first idea, understanding of this Daniel's prophecy. Number one is this. The entire prophecy covers 70 prophetical weeks, or 490 years. Now, the reason I say that, a prophetical week is not 7 days. A prophetical week is 7 years. So 70 times 7 is 490. Now, you're thinking, Caps on, and you're thinking with me. But you just said this was spoken 2,500 years ago. And the prophecy only covers less than 500 of those years. You're right. There's a big gap there, isn't there? How could that be? Well, we'll get that in a moment. Okay, so the entire prophecy covers 70 prophetical weeks, or 490 years. Now, this prophecy is divided into three sections. We saw that as we read through it, but we'll look back at it again. Back to Daniel 9. I want you to notice the three sections. I'll put it up here, and then we're going to use a graphic as well. The graphic may help your brain to process a little bit better, but I'll give it to you kind of in a data set here. Okay, so first, the first section is 7 weeks, or 7 years, 49 years. Okay, remember, a week is not 7 days. A week is 7 years. So seven-year periods. That's 49 years. We see that in Daniel chapter 9. Look with me in verse 25. Knowing therefore and understand that from the going forth the commandment to restore and to build Jerusalem to the Messiah the Prince shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. Now, the 62 weeks is the next section, but the 7 weeks is that first section. So there's a 49-year period. Now, we think our best understanding is the decree was 457 B.C. in Ezra chapter 7, I believe it was, when the king gave Ezra the command to go back and do some rebuilding. That's our understanding of when that decree was sent out. So we're looking about in Ezra chapter 7. And then you have about a 49-year period. And then you have a second. So the first section is 7 weeks. That's from a decree given to the finishing of the building so they could be re-inhabited. Jerusalem, it could be re-inhabited for the people to return. The second section is 62 weeks, or 62 times 7, which is 434 years. That is from the end of that rebuilding period, end of that 49 years, to the presentation of the Messiah to the Jewish people. 7 plus another 62. So a total of 69 weeks. Which would be 483. It'd be easy if I just add the numbers in front of me, wouldn't it? Instead of trying to calculate in my head. Okay, so that takes us, look with me in Daniel chapter 9, look at verse 3. And after 62 weeks, at the end of that second period, so that's inclusive of the first seven weeks, but he's talking about at the end of that second segment. And after 62 weeks, shall Messiah be cut off. Watch this, but not for himself. In other words, was this because Jesus did something wrong? No. Why was he cut off? For us. He was crucified for us. And so, Messiah is going to be cut off, but not for himself. So now we have another week. So we've gone to 69. It's a total of 70 weeks. We've covered 69. How many weeks are missing? How many weeks are missing? 1 week is missing, okay? Now that brings us to Daniel chapter 9, look at verse 27. And he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. That's our third section of Daniel's prophecy, another 7 year period. So, in essence, you have 49 years for the rebuilding of Jerusalem. Then you have another 434 years that goes from that rebuilding to Jesus' presentation. And then you have a 7 year period, which is that final week. And notice what he says, he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. So now you have this peace covenant that the Antichrist is making with Israel for that 7 year period, that 1 week. Now, in the midst of that 7 year period, notice what happens. Look at verse 27 again. And in the midst of the week, after 3.5 years, he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease. So in the midst of that 7 year period, the Antichrist breaks the covenant, and then he sets himself up as God. Now, I don't want to get into the weeds because that's a whole other study in itself, so I'm going to give it to you real quick, okay? So basically, during that 7 year tribulation period, you go through 3.5 years, and all of a sudden, you have the Antichrist going into the rebuilt temple saying, I'm God, worship me. The peace treaty is broke, and now there's 3.5 years of what we call great tribulation. Now, you wonder, how does this happen? Well, let me tell you one of the devil's great lies, peace. Just go along. Don't make waves. You know, why do you got to preach against homosexuality? Why can't people shack up and not be married? How come we can't just do what we want? Just let people live the way they want. Let's just have peace. But that's not peace. That's sin. And sin is the destruction. Sin doesn't bring blessing. Sin brings cursing. And so the lie of Satan is always this lie of peace, but it's a lie. In fact, this peace he's talking about is kind of like a, if you know what history, Roman peace. You know how Romans had peace, don't you? They came in and they killed everyone who didn't go along with them. And everyone left and said, okay, peace. Exactly, that's what we thought. And so that's kind of Antichrist. He's coming down with a hammer, so it's really not peace per se. It's not like everyone is joining hands singing Kumbaya. It's everyone saying, okay, we're just not going to do anything because we don't want to get killed. But after 3.5 years, when he sets himself up as God, that's just too much. And then it all breaks loose. Go with me to Matthew 24. Now, again, I don't want to get too far in this, but I do want to show you a little bit of scripture. Matthew 24. And look with me in verse 15. When ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation, watch it, spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place, whoso readeth, let him understand. Then let him which be in Judea flee in the mountains. He's talking about this middle of that 7-year period, when this Antichrist commits this abomination. Okay, then let them which be in Judea flee in the mountains. Let them which is on the housetop not come down to take anything out of his house. Neither let him which is in the field return back to take his clothes. And woe unto them that are with child and them that give suck in those days. But pray that your flight be not in winter, neither on the Sabbath day. For then, talking about after this 3.5-year period, so in other words, the second 3.5, after he set himself up as God, this abomination of desolation, okay, for then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. And except those days, that 3.5 period, except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. Then if any man shall say unto you, lo, here is Christ, or there, believe it not, for there shall rise false Christs and false prophets, and shall show thee signs and wonders, if it were possible, that they shall deceive the very elect. Okay? We're a little bit farther than I was going to, but just to give you the idea of what you're talking about, what Jesus is talking about there. So let me give you a graphic to help you maybe process it in your brain a little bit better. So it kind of looks like this. Okay? There's a 7-week period, 49 years. That's the first 7 weeks. That's the second 62 weeks. And this is the last week. Now, it's not drawn to scale, in case you're wondering. That's obviously a size of 62, okay? And it's split in half, 3.5, and 3.5. If you notice, after the 62 and before the last one, there's a big gap here. How is that? Did I run out of ink? Did I forget to put something in there? Or are we going to wait to add to it? Well, we're going to add to that in just a second. Okay, so that is the first understanding here of the prophecy. It's 70 weeks, 490 years. Okay, let's look at it a second way. Number two. Oops. Yes, I do have another mark there. Sorry. At the end of those 70 weeks, Jesus returns to set up his kingdom. Okay, if I go back to the graphic, this point here is when Jesus returns, okay, at the end of that seventh year of the tribulation, that last week right there. All right. Let's look at number two. Daniel's prophecy deals with the Jewish people in relationship to the Messianic kingdom. Now, why do I say that? Go back to Daniel 9, look at verse 24. 70 weeks are determined upon thy people and upon thy holy city. The reason there's a big gap here is because the 70 weeks is dealing with the Jewish people. So he deals with the first 49 years, then the next 62 weeks, which is 434 years, and then those last 7 years, the focus there is on the Jewish people. So Daniel's prophecy deals with the Jewish people in relationship to the Messianic kingdom. Again, go back to verse 24. Okay, to finish a transgression, to make an end of sins, to make reconciliation with iniquity, bring in everlasting righteousness, to seal division and prophecy. Now watch this, to anoint the Most High. That's the idea of setting up the Messianic kingdom. To the Jewish person, everything revolved around when will the kingdom be? Jesus is crucified, he's risen from the dead, and what do they ask him? Are you going to set up your kingdom now? Is it now? Is it now? Is it now? Are we setting up the kingdom now? Because for a Jewish person, it was all about that Messianic kingdom. And Daniel is talking about that and showing the relationship of the Jewish people to that Messianic kingdom, the prophecies that dealt with that. So the first 69 weeks of that prophecy deals or focuses on the Jewish people from Daniel's time all the way to Jesus' presentation. And therefore, so does that final week also focus on the Jewish people. So you have this period of time, this is talking about the Jewish people, this is talking about the Jewish people. There's only 1 week left, and he said all 70 weeks are about thy people and thy holy city, so guess what this is about? Jewish people. Now you're wondering, well, where do we fit in? Again, I bring your attention, there's a big gap here. We're going to fill that in just a second. The local church and the people of Israel are two distinct groups, but they must be understood accordingly. You can't just put them together or ignore either one. Both groups, now think about this, both groups find their fulfillment in the millennial kingdom. The Jewish people are looking towards the Messianic kingdom. We're looking towards the Messianic kingdom, and we're kind of in a looking at it differently, especially if you think about the lost Jews and how they're thinking about it. But both of us are focusing towards that. So we're both going to find our fulfillment in that millennial kingdom. But until then, we're separate. We're not Israel, and they're not the church. We're the church, they're Israel. Two separate groups. Number three, I'm trying to hasten because I already see that we're not halfway through, but we're chewing up some time here. Number three. Now let's look at that graphic one more time. The church age was not seen by Daniel. Why not? Because he was a Jewish prophet. And his prophecy dealt with the Jewish people. The church age was not seen by Daniel. And that church age is what fills that gap between week 69 and week 70. Go with me to Ephesians 3. Now, don't lose me on the details of the prophecy, because the application is a more personal, because that's what an application is. But I want you to understand the basis of this. Ephesians 3, look with me in verse 3. This is Paul speaking. How that by revelation he made known unto me the mystery, as I wrote afore in few words, whereby when you read you may understand my knowledge and the mystery of Christ. Now what is he talking about? Which in other ages or other times was not made known unto the sons of men. Daniel didn't understand this. Isaiah didn't understand this. Jeremiah didn't understand this. As it is now revealed unto his holy apostles and prophets by the Spirit. Now here's the mystery, that the Gentiles should be fellow heirs and of the same body, and partakers of his promise in Christ by the gospel, whereof I was made a minister according to the gift of the grace of God given to me by the effectual working of his power. Unto me, who am less than the least of all saints, is this grace given, that I should preach among the Gentiles the unsearchable riches of Christ. Now for us, this is like, of course, but for the Jewish people, they're like, what? Really? Gentiles? And to make all men see what is the fellowship of the mystery which from the beginning of the world hath been hid in God, who created all things by Jesus Christ, to the intent that now unto the principalities and powers in heavenly places might be known by the church the manifold wisdom of God according to, watch this, the eternal purpose which he purposed in Christ Jesus our Lord. And this is always the Lord's plan, but is now being revealed. So what we see in this gap is this. Here's about the Jewish people. Here's about the Jewish people. Here's about the Jewish people. But in between now, for about 2,000 years, what we call the church age. This is a big gap that they did not see, but we're living in. This is the local church. This is dealing with the Gentiles. The gospel's going to all the world and preach the gospel. Now, the Jewish people thought it's all about us. And it really was, for 69 weeks, it really was all about them. At least the focus was. But now God, because of their rejection of Christ, and this is the eternal purpose, God already knew about it, didn't surprise him. God didn't have to say, okay, what am I going to do now? They rejected my son. He already knew this was his purpose. It's all planned out. It's all working together to accomplish what he's trying to accomplish. But right now the focus is on the worldwide spread of the gospel among primarily the Gentile people. Jewish people really don't want to hear the gospel. We may have respect to the Jewish people. The Jewish people still are very antagonistic. You know, Israel's a great country. Don't try to go there and openly evangelize. You'll get yourself in trouble. They don't want the gospel. Jewish people don't want to hear the gospel, because the gospel basically says this: you killed the Messiah. Well, they're like, well, we don't want to hear that. Well, it's true. Not to be against them, but that's the reality of it. Okay, so this gap now is this church age that we're living in up to the rapture time. So the Gentiles are the primary participants in this current church age. Most churches you go to are 99.9% Gentile. Hard to find a Jewish person. Now you go back to the church in Jerusalem, they're all Jewish, saved Jewish people. But now today, maybe you know someone who's saved and who's Jewish, but you would be the exception. Okay? So the primary participants in this current church age are the Gentiles. The Jews have rejected the Messiah, their Messiah, and are basically set aside, kind of on a shelf, as it were, set aside for now. God is not working through the nation of Israel. God is working through the local church, and the local church is primarily made up of Gentile believers. Now, when the rapture occurs, the church age ends, and now we're back into that last week, that last 7 years, and the Jews again will play the central role in God's plans. Go with me to Revelation 7. Revelation 7. Look at verse 1. And after these things, I saw four angels standing on the four corners of the earth, holding the four winds of the earth, that the wind should not blow on the earth, nor on the sea, nor on any tree. And I saw another angel ascending from the east, having the seal of the living God, and he cried with a loud voice to the four angels to whom it was given to hurt the earth and the sea, saying, "Hurt not the earth, neither the sea, nor the trees, till we have sealed the servants of our gods in their foreheads." And I heard the number of them which were sealed, and there were sealed 144,000, watch this, of all the tribes of the children of Israel. And he goes through 12,000 of this tribe, 12,000 of this, 12,000 of this, 12,000 of this. So the Jehovah's Witnesses believe that's 144,000 Jehovah's Witnesses. They are wrong. These are 144,000 Jewish converts who now become soul winners, evangelists covering the world during that tribulation period. Again, there's a lot to unpack, but we've got to move on. So the Jewish people are still a part of God's plan, but for now, the Gentiles play this major role. Okay, that's the prophecy in a nutshell. Now let me give you some personal application. What does it mean for us? Number four, here's what it means for us. Prophecy will not be fully understood till it is fulfilled. That's the first thing to understand. If you think you got it all figured out, you don't. I don't, you don't. Okay, Matthew 24. Let's look what Jesus says here. And we're going to do Matthew 24 again after this, so you might want to hold your place. Matthew 24, look with me in verse 36. But of that day and hour knoweth, now watch this, knoweth no man. No, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. He's talking about this return of Christ, knowing the exact day and hour when Jesus is coming. But as the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. What does that mean? For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and knew not until the flood came and took them all away, so also the coming Son of Man should be. In other words, life will continue. Everything will continue. All of a sudden, whoa. It happens. Okay? And so the world is clueless. The world is closed eye to it. So the prophecy will not be fully understood till it is fulfilled. Now I say that for this reason. Prophecy may tempt our imagination. Oh, what does that mean? And who is that? And how could that be? And what is that one world religion? And what nationality is that? Sorry, this thing keeps popping off my ear for some reason. What nationality is that Antichrist, and who makes up those 10 kings out of Europe and such? So prophecy may tempt our imagination, but it should not consume our attention. We can get so caught up in it that we forget what we're supposed to be doing now. Think about this statement. Trying to understand fully what can't be understood fully eventually causes people to become dogmatic about those things which they don't really understand. So no matter what Bible secret or Bible code or Bible math or Bible mystery you discover, in air quotes, you cannot know the day and hour that Jesus is returning. I don't care how you look at it. Well, you know, on this feast day, and on this sacrifice, and on this event, and on this when the moon turns into striped, like a striped tomato, and then all of a sudden when the clouds move this way, that's the day Jesus is coming, and that's going to be on this particular day of this particular month and this particular year. No, you do not know. How do I know? No man knoweth. Okay? There is no secret code. God has purposely kept us in the dark. Well, why? Well, one reason is this. If you knew Jesus was coming in a week, most of us, as carnal as we are, would charge up every credit card we have. We'd live to the max as God is coming back in a week and I don't have to pay it back. He knows that. We're carnal. Way more carnal than we should be. The other thing is this. Why does it matter? Your job is X. It doesn't matter whether you do it for the next 2 days, 2 years, or 2 decades. Our job is what our job is as far as serving the Lord and being faithful. So let me give you a statement here. This offends some people. Every person who proclaims a date has been wrong and will be wrong. I have friends who have claimed a date. Surprise, surprise, they were wrong. It's like, we went to the same Bible college. Did you not understand when it says, no man knoweth? Well, I thought, quit thinking. Not good for you. Okay, prophecy will not be fully understood till all is fulfilled. Let's not get caught up in a date. Let's just caught up in a job. Our job is to serve the Lord. Number five, here's a second application. Believers are to be busy obeying Jesus while they wait to see Jesus. Remember when Jesus ascended up to heaven? Remember what the disciples were doing? They're just sitting there staring. And the angel said, hey, why are you sitting there staring? Did you not hear going to all the world and preach the gospel? Okay, did you not get that part of it? So we're not just saying, well, is he coming today? What if he's coming today? I mean, it doesn't hurt, I don't think, to maybe consider for a few moments, but really, okay, if he is coming today, let's get busy serving him. If he's coming tomorrow, let's serve him today. If he's coming in a week, let's serve him now for a week. Okay, let's just serve him. Let's be busy obeying Jesus while we wait to see Jesus. Matthew 24 again, look with me in verse 44. Therefore be ye also ready, for in such an hour as you think not the Son of Man cometh. Who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his Lord has made ruler over his household to give him meat in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his Lord when he cometh shall find so doing. Good encouragement for all of us. So the second coming in its totality, the rapture and the revelation, the second coming will occur precisely on God's timetable. My guess is this, most of us are going to be wrong about something. Typically that's how when prophecy happens, I don't know if anyone ever gets it 100%. So we try our best, we try to understand it, we all are somehow a little off because that's the thing about prophecy. It hasn't happened yet. And there's things that I showed you before about the verse about Jesus being called out of Egypt. There's no way, and that's back in Hosea, there's no way you'd have read that verse and said, oh, see, here's a verse about Jesus coming out of Egypt. You never saw it that way. But once it happened, the Bible tells us this is what it said, and this is what, we're like, oh, yeah, it makes perfect sense now. So there's some verses here that none of us probably are looking at that helps us understand. All of us see through a glass darkly. None of us have arrived and understand it fully. Okay, so we try to understand it the best we can, stand firm on what we believe the Bible says, but don't get so caught up that we're trying to dissect the exact moment of all these things and forget about what we're supposed to be doing today, which is serving the Lord. So the second coming will occur precisely on God's timetable without question. But there is a question. And the question is whether believers will be so doing when the second coming occurs. That's the question. What are we going to be doing when Jesus comes back? So the purpose of knowing about end times like tonight is not so we can have a date of Jesus' return, but rather we are reminded that it's going to happen and we need to be busy up to that point in time. Now to me, the encouragement of the rapture is this, that Either I'm going to go by way of death to heaven, or I'm going to go by way of rapture to heaven, but either way I'm going to heaven. All I need to be busy from now to that moment. Because I may say, well, you know, I'm in perfect health. I might live another 30 years, or the rapture may happen tomorrow. I don't know, but I need to be busy up to that day, serving him, living for him, faithful to him. That's, I think, the best encouragement we should get from when we think about end times, that God has a timetable. It's going to happen exactly as he has it planned. We just need to be faithful serving up to that day. Okay, number six, the third application. And that is this. A little different, but maybe applies more so now because it seems to be a issue for some reason all around now. We should be supportive and protective of the Jewish people. Now, why do I say that? Let's go all the way back to Genesis, Genesis chapter 12. Let's go way back before Daniel, Genesis chapter 12. And look with me, let's look at the first seven verses together. We call this the Abrahamic covenant, God's covenant made to Abraham. Verse 1, chapter 12. Now the Lord had said in Abram, which is going to be Abraham later, get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house into a land that I'll show thee. And I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. Now watch this. And I will bless them that bless thee and curse him that curseth thee. Now that's, God is making a statement here. I'm going to bless those who bless thee. And he's talking about it because in the context, he's talking about, I'm going to make you a great nation. So it's not just Abraham himself. It's that nation. It's those folks coming after him. And I'll bless them that bless thee and curse them that curse thee. And in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed. So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken to him. And Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. Let's just read a couple more. Let's go drop down to verse 7. I'm going to skip a couple of verses. And the Lord appeared unto Abram and said, unto thy seed will I give this land. And there builded he an altar unto the Lord who appeared unto him. Now, beyond Daniel's prophecy concerning the Jewish people is God's promise to Abraham. So we looked from Daniel going forward. That's all the prophecy about the coming messianic kingdom. But prior to Daniel, God had already made a covenant with the people of Israel. I'm going to bless you. I'm going to give you this land. Those who bless you, I will bless. Those who curse you, I will curse. So the Abrahamic covenant, that's what we're talking about here in Genesis 12, still applies to the Jewish people. People say, well, that was Old Testament, and because Jesus was crucified now, that's not what that, first of all, nothing in the Bible says that. And second of all, that covenant has never been realized. The Jewish people have never had the land that God promised them. They've had portions of it at different times. They've never had all the land. Part of it's their own fault, but they've never inhabited all the land. That is yet to be fulfilled. This covenant has never been fulfilled in totality. So the Abrahamic covenant still applies to the Jewish people, even though it is yet to be fully realized. Now, let me give you a caveat. It is important to note that prophetical Israel, which is what we're talking about, kind of a prophetical side of Israel, is not the same as modern-day political Israel. Sometimes that's what gets us in trouble. Not that I'm against modern-day Israel, but they're not the same. I mentioned earlier, today's Israel is not God-friendly. They're Jewish-friendly, but they're not Bible-God-friendly. They're not Jesus-friendly at all. So I'm not saying that modern-day Israel is this, you know, Edenic, Nirvana, heaven on earth place for us to go to. Someday Jesus is returning. He'll set up his kingdom and he will, from New Jerusalem, reign over the earth. Yeah, that is true. It's not today, though. And Israel is not a gospel-friendly country. I understand that. And the Jewish people have certain issues, just like any other people have issues. Okay, they tend to put their finger in the eyes of their neighbors, and their neighbors tend to point the guns back at them. So there's a lot of things going on politically in the Middle East. I understand that. But I'm looking from the prophetical side. When God talked about a group of people and said, I'm going to bless those who bless you, then I'm thinking, I would like God's blessing. I'm going to curse those who curse you. Well, I don't want God's cursing. So I'm going to think about how I'm treating, how I'm dealing with, how I'm talking about, how I'm referring to this Jewish people. Not that they're all perfect, not that they're all saved, not that they all love Jesus, okay? But on a prophetic side, I got to be thoughtful because God has made a promise here. So prophetical Israel is not the same as modern-day political Israel. Modern-day Israel may be a sign of the Jews returning to the land, which I think that's true, but they have not returned to God. That'll happen, but it hasn't happened yet. I think the nation is worthy of our support. Just so you, I don't want you sitting there saying, what are you trying to get to? I think if you look in the Middle East, there's only one country that really has a freely elected government. That's Israel. All the other countries are tyrannical dictatorships, kingdoms, or whatever, and they are allies only to the point where it serves their purpose, which may be every ally, but some of those countries, it's interesting, one of our great allies, Saudi Arabia, is kind of home to some terrorists who flew planes into our buildings in New York City. I think the only true ally we have in the Middle East is Israel. I don't think they're a perfect country. I don't think America's a perfect country. But I do believe politically it's a free country, some common values. But that's not why I'm lined up with them. I'm lined up with them because God made a promise to his people. He made a covenant to them. And I'm not going to go against the people that God said. You know, here's funny. If you study history, everyone's been against the Jews. I mean, Hitler wasn't the first one to try to wipe out the Jews. But they've never been wiped out. It's kind of like the Bible. Others have tried to wipe out the Bible, but the Bible still remains. It's almost like God's behind it. Okay, I don't want to go against God. So I'm not going to attack God's people, God's covenant people, or God's born-again people. And God's covenant people, these Jewish people, are still part of his plan. All right, let me give you the, because we're out of time, let me give you the last points here, last thoughts. So Daniel's prophecy gives us this broad outline of God's plan to set up his earthly kingdom. That's what it is. He says, Daniel, here's how I'm going to go. And at the end, Jesus sits on a throne on the earth. We're not there yet, but that's his broad outline. Now, there are other places in the Bible that fills in some of these details and gives more information. That is true. And we didn't cover those because that wasn't the nature of this particular study. We've looked at those at other times. Okay, so there's a lot of things that fill in. So Daniel sets up the outline or the broad understanding. And then we have some things in Thessalonians. We have some things even in some of the messianic promises in Isaiah and Zechariah and Zephaniah, Hosea. There's some Psalms in there that helps us understand some details. Obviously, Revelations, some other places as well. So there are places that fill in some of the details and gives more information. Yet, here's the key, and we're done. No teaching on end times should be interpreted apart from Daniel's prophecy. Daniel is that baseline. It's the foundation. And everything else kind of fits, and we add to that and come to what we understand the end time prophecy to be.